Welcome to the Season 2 finale of The Rocketry Show at therocketryshow.com. Today's show is a fun one. We've got John Beans from Jolly Logic joining us. We're going to be talking about the Shoot release, and it's going to be really great. You're going to learn everything you ever wanted to know about it and more. So stick around. The Rocketry Show starts right after this. This episode of The Rocketry Show is brought to you by Sirius Rocketry. Since 1998, providing the Rocketeer with great kits, motors, supplies, and more. Tons of products in their ever-growing web store with fast shipping, wide selection, and courteous service. Check out the amazing and popular Sirius Rocketry kits that harken back to the days of fun-to-build detailed kits that are more than just three fins and a nose cone. They carry the best of the rest from hobby's leading rocketry manufacturers from low to high power. Ask about their club specials. More information at siriusrocketry.biz and .com. Sirius Rocketry for the Sirius Rocketeer.
You're listening to The Rocketry Show, brought to you by the guys who love the smell of burning ammonium perchlorate in the morning. CG, Gene, and Daniel, the Rocket Noob.
All right, I'm cooler than you are. Why don't you fix your little problems and light this candle?
Yes. Resume the countdown.
Nine. Here are CG, Gene, and the Rocket Noob.
Welcome back to The Rocketry Show at therocketryshow.com. Today's very special guest is John Beans. He's the president of Jolly Logic. So you probably know that name from the Altimeter 1, Altimeter 2, and Altimeter 3. But now he's got the Shoot release that you've heard Gene talk about over and over again and gushing on about it. So now we're going to really get to talk about it. So welcome to the show, John.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey, John, welcome. Nice to have you. I just I have to say that I bought a few of these Shoot releases, and I've had a limited testing on them, but so far they are awesome. So,
well, I love to hear that. Thank you for the kind words.
Oh, no problem. So, whatever possessed you to come up with this little gizmo?
Well, the story of Jolly Logic was that I was I've been working in Silicon Valley at various tech firms for 20 or 30 years, and on the weekends, you know, we would fly rockets, my kids and I, and they'd ask me questions that I couldn't answer. How high'd that rocket go? And it's really hard when you're on the ground to really tell what's going on. So I would make stuff up, but I have smart kids and they quickly figure out I didn't know what I was talking about. So that's where the first altimeter came from. And along the way, it went from a hobby to being a business for me. And one of the problems with my business is that when you load up a test rocket with 10 or 20 altimeters and it drifts away, it's a bad thing. That's a bad day. You know, and so I've been kind of constantly thinking, oh, you know, I've got to have a more reliable way to keep these things from drifting away, because the more extreme the rockets got, the harder it was to get all of my altimeters back.
Right.
And that's really where Shoot release came from. And I had to make the decision about whether to go to dual deploy like everybody does.
Right.
And with my kids, I really didn't want to be setting off black powder charges.
Ah.
And so I just kind of put it off and put it off and put it off. I mentioned it at a Narcon presentation that I did for electronics 3 or 4 years ago. And the audience was much more enthusiastic than I thought. So I said, well, okay, maybe I'm not the only one that would really like to have something like this. When I brought it up the second time at Cape Canaveral a couple of years ago, the crowd basically kind of shouted me down and said, just go do it. You know, we need this. You
do
need
it.
And I was surprised because – yeah, do it now. Take my money. But I was surprised because people in the crowds were flying some pretty big rockets. So these weren't unsophisticated people.
Right.
And I had a little bit of a theory that once you have figured out how to do dual deployment, you just build all your rockets that way and you buy gunpowder and it's no big deal. And so if someone like me came along and said, hey, I got this vision to make this easier and safer and cleaner and much more portable and convenient, I thought that they would say, you know what, we don't really need that. We already, that problem's been solved a long time ago. And, you know, it's going to be of limited interest. But what I found was that people feel a lot more like I do. And so I started paying attention to people at launches and noticing that guys that were doing more sophisticated dual deploy setups, it takes a long time to prep a rocket for something like that.
Yes.
And so they would, I would say, hey, can I get my altimeter in your rocket? And they would say, because remember when I'm coming up with like altimeter 2 and altimeter 3, I'm looking for, you know, more sophisticated rockets and things to put it in. And they would say, okay, yeah, I'm going to be ready probably in about an hour, hour and a half. So if you come back, we can snap your altimeter in and go. And I was looking at that going, oh my gosh, do I really want to get into that? And so it kind of reinforced, you know, we need something more convenient. We need a more convenient way to do this, to get dual deploy for everybody. And so really, really last summer, I really got serious about it, about shoot release and coming up with a final industrial design that would make it kind of easy and universal. And that's kind of what had happened. That's when you saw me poke up on the forums and start to talk to people about, hey, who wants to help me test this new device?
Right. And our friend Andrew Kleinhens was one of the first people to jump on it.
That's
right. The first time that I saw that, he's actually been a mentor to me. Hi, Andrew. Yeah, I said it. I learned a lot from him. And when he was like, I'm a level 2, and I've been doing, you know, obviously the dual deploy, dual altimeters, fairly sophisticated setup, big stuff. And I was like, that is really cool because I like to fly mid power and smaller rockets that either I don't feel like or want to expend the energy to build an altimeter bay for, or just expend the time, you know, because when I started out, I was doing, you know, just low power like everybody else. And I would launch maybe 10 or 15 rockets in the day. By the time I got into my level 1 and level 2, I was maybe shooting, I came to the realization that, yeah, I'm only going to be doing like 2 or 3 at best. Right. And, you know, at that point I was like, okay, well, I love the prep and I love the big stuff, but I still want to fly too. And this thing is perfect for, you know, any of the Pro Series rockets from Estes, like the Leviathan or, you know, Argent was the first one I tested it in. And I saw Andrew fly this thing at a launch down in Dayton, Ohio. And I was amazed because time after time, he must have launched it like 3 or 4 times, turned it around, put another single use in it, go again. And he was hitting 2,000 feet on G motors with this small rocket, and it was coming out beautifully. And it was like landing close to, it was a dual deploy system without all the hassle. So immediately I was struck and had to have them. So I've had a chance to test it, and I'm very impressed with the product. And I had one question that has been kind of like in the back of my mind. You probably heard, I've seen it on the forums, but I'll ask you. When you're using a shoot release, it's a barometric pressure sensor, correct?
It has a pressure sensor in it, yes.
Okay. And there's a lot of people that the big question is, do you put a pressure port in your rocket or not?
Yeah. Good question, because, you know, since 2009, we've been making altimeters that needed pressure ports. During testing, we figured out a way to modify the firmware so that you don't need pressure ports with the shoot release. And it has to do with the fact that we kind of got it as a side effect to fixing a problem. We had a problem, and I think Andrew probably saw this. I know that some of the other guys did. We had a little bug that we had to get rid of. And in fixing that bug, we discovered that really the best algorithm that we came up with didn't need to know the pressure on the way up. And in fact, it would be a little more robust if it didn't. And so the shoot release just waits until it's above 100 feet. And in any kind of normal flight, you're going to eject your chute, and it's going to have plenty of time above 100 feet. So even if you don't vent it, it's still going to work fine. And you've seen some people probably online that have said, hey, I did it. I flew it. I didn't vent it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's kind of a bonus, because one of my design goals for shoot release was it just works. So whatever the rocket
sounds very
is,
Apple-esque.
If it doesn't work, then I get called. So, you know, it increases the support burden. But I guess that what I mean by just works is if it'll physically fit in the rocket, then a clever person can find a way to make it work. And you don't necessarily have to vent it. Some people do like to vent their rockets just for belts and suspenders. Like, what if you had a marginal flight which just barely got above 100 feet and started arcing over, you know? You'd have to dream up a pretty complicated little scenario there, but That's a long answer to your question, which is no, you don't need vents with shingles.
No, see, that's great because I was like trying to figure out the science behind it. I was like, okay, well, it's got to be something in the coating or the firmware that was used to create it, because I mean, it's from a physical standpoint, you obviously you'd want one, you know, just you know, if there wasn't any firmware modification. So and it's just interesting to know that you guys actually solved the problem, which again makes it simple and easy. I mean, I'm retrofitting like five of my rockets, my mid power rockets, to these that I have dedicated shoot releases in each of them. And yeah, I'm a little crazy about them, but, my main goal,
you're so spoiled, you know, not many people have a shoot release for every rocket that they have. That's pretty good.
Well, I don't have enough for everyone, but they are numbered individually and they're paired. Never mind. But what I really want to do is, can you talk a little bit about going in? I've seen some stuff online where you can actually daisy chain them together for larger rockets.
You know, what I want to do is, before we get to that, we'll make this probably a three-part question here, because one thing I want to do is back up a little bit and first ask, what types of rocket diameters can you fit the chute release in, one, and two, how does the chute release work at, you know, and then we get to James.
Right. Yeah. We probably should back up. There may be people listening to this that kind of don't even know what the chute release is. So I'll really quickly.
See, I'm so excited. I just jump ahead. I'm sorry about that.
I'm asking because I don't have one yet. So,
yeah. So it's a little black device. It's about the size of a book of matches. Once you've put it together, it's got a rubber band that actually hooks into one side of it. You fold up your chute. You stretch the band around the chute and you snap it into the other side of the chute release, which holds it. You launch your rocket, you eject your chute like you normally would, but the chute release holds it folded. And then when it reaches the altitude, when your rocket has dropped down to the altitude that you've selected on the chute release, it'll release the pin, the band will open, your parachute will inflate, and your rocket will land. And there's different size bands that we ship with chute release. There's some short ones that'll work on little small parachutes, and there's larger bands that'll reach around bigger bundles. And you're even free to combine the bands if you want to reach around a really big chute. The reason that we use rubber bands, and when we first started talking about this product online, people were like, wait a minute, you know, I'm launching a K-motor rocket up to 8,000 feet, and I'm going to hold my parachute with a rubber band? I mean, please, I don't think so, you know. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't take much to hold a parachute folded. Even being explosively blown out of a tube, you have to be careful about it. But it's totally possible. And Andrew's done some interesting things and shared it with some interesting people at his launches. You know, that's kind of how it works. Now, it's not, you know, teensy tiny. You know, it's about a quarter of an inch thick. It's about an inch wide. It's about an inch and a half tall. So it does take up room. So if you're flying a 38 millimeter rocket, that's about the smallest that you're going to be able to put it in. And at that size rocket, now 38 millimeters, for those of you that don't fly minimum diameter rockets, it's a little bit smaller than a Big Bertha. So I think everybody kind of can mentally, if you're kind of into rocketry, think about that Big Bertha as being a size. Mm-hmm. It works great with Big Bertha. So that's a pretty small rocket with a pretty small parachute. You have to be careful when they're smaller rockets. If they're larger rockets, if they're, you know, 2.6 inch, like a Aerotech Strong Arm, or 3 inch or 4 inch or anything that size, like the Pro Series 2 Estes, there's tons of room in those. It'll rattle around inside those.
Right.
That's not a big deal. But, you know, the skill here, and this, it does take a new skill, is how do you wrap your parachute and hold it with the chute release securely so that, one, it doesn't shake open during ejection, and two, when the chute release does release the pin, that it inflates quickly, right? So that's kind of the sport here. You'll hear people talking about with chute releases, what kind of folds are you using, how quickly did it open, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah. So yeah, on me with me the rockets, I tend to use the cable cutter thing on, which I'm kind of curious about the chute release here. I happen to be about 38 millimeters, so that's where I was kind of, the pictures I saw of it kind of said that'll be kind of close. I wonder if it'll fit in there. So
yeah, it's a tight fit. It's a tight fit at 38 millimeters. In fact, one person online noticed that when they put the band around their chute and they figured out a clever way to do it, they were getting a little bit of stiction because the rubber band, you know how rubber is, kind of squeaky.
Yeah.
And so they actually replaced it with their own elastic fabric band that had less friction against the side of their rocket. And they flew that and they said it worked great. And that kind of inspired me. And I said, you know what, we probably need to, as we go here, we need some band options for folks. You know, maybe some that are a little larger, maybe some that are a little more slippery, mm-hmm. maybe some that are a little more adjustable, for instance.
Sure.
You know, that's what I'd love to have one band that you could adjust to be for any diameter. And I don't have it yet. I've got some prototypes, but I don't quite have it yet. But when it comes to big parachutes, you know, the goals are the same. Whether you're flying a little rocket or a big rocket, you've got to keep that parachute securely bundled, and right. you don't want to shake out during ejection. You know, one thing I mentioned to someone online recently that I want to try is I want to take a rubber band and wrap it multiple times around a bundle, and see how reliably that can work. See what the right way to do that is, because if you can imagine a bundle in a much larger rocket, so the bundle might be the size of, you know, not quite a loaf of bread, but, you know, right. something that's going to fit in a 4 or 5 inch tube and it's going to be 6 or 8 inches long. I'd like to work on a bundle for that you look at and go, okay, great. Wrap a blanket around that and you're good to go, because that is not going to be, not going to shake right. open in the deployment.
Right.
But that's what we're getting to. You know, that's kind of where chute release flying is going right now. People are inching their way up, bigger and bigger rockets, trying to figure out the right kind of way to do things. And that's one of the things I love about rocketry is if you're at a launch and you're talking to folks, you can go up to anybody and say, hey, here's my parachute. I just flew it and it wadded up and it never deployed. What do you do?
Yeah.
And I had a guy at a lunar launch here in California that's kind of an expert in parachute folding who, you know, 4 years ago kind of taught me how to fold a chute the right way. So, you know. That's one of the things I love about rocketry is
absolutely.
Almost everybody you can go up to and say, that rocket looks a lot like mine. What are you doing? That was a great flight you had. What are you doing? And folks love to tell you what their tips
absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely. That's the beauty about the hobby is that, you know, in some hobbies, people are kind of like hush hush or shy or not, or, you know, mm-hmm. and in this hobby, every launch I've been to, and I've been to numerous launches at various different places around the country. And it's great. Cause you're just like, hey, how you doing? You know, I noticed this, and then you start talking, and then all of a sudden you're friends. It's amazing. Yep. And that's what I really love about this hobby.
Yep. There we go.
Same here.
So about let's go to the daisy chaining thing, because I've seen sure. like there's the chute release is a very simple to operate device. Could you tell a little bit about the operation of it before we get into that? Like
sure.
how does it work? How do you turn it on? How do you work it?
Sure, absolutely. So it's got two buttons. It's got a left and a right button on it, and then it's got a row of altitudes. And you hit any button to turn it on. You hit the right button, and the altitude lights up higher and higher. It'll go from 100 feet, which is 30 meters. Up to 1,000 feet, which is 300 meters. You can select whatever release altitude that you want. You take the band, wrap it around your folded parachute, and snap it in. You have to remember to tether it, right? So once it releases, yeah. you don't want to lose your chute release. You have to tether it
That'd be
to
bad.
A line, to a shroud line, to a shock cord line. But you want to make sure you don't put any stress on the chute release. You don't want to have it eject and rip the chute release off. The tether is just to keep the chute release with your rocket after it lets go. And that's it. Then you load it up and it's ready to go. I came up with a new low power architecture for this as opposed to my altimeters, and the battery life on the chute release goes forever. So it would literally take 5 or 6 days of leaving it on for the battery to run down enough that you'd have to recharge it. But if you're just flying it and doing flights, I mean, it's going to go many, 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 many flights before you need to recharge it.
Which is amazing, because that battery is tiny.
And it's the same battery that the new battery that we use, the new altimeter 1, altimeter 2, and altimeter 3. We figured out a way to do the servo and a way to do the sensors and everything with really low power. And so it's good to be able to use that little battery.
Oh, sure. That's key to it. Now, I've noticed that if you do want to put the two or three of them together, if you have a particularly large bundle, let's just say
right.
that you want a redundant system for a large, like say 60 or 70 inch parachute.
Right. It's understandable too, right? Because you're putting in a really heavy rocket. You're thinking to yourself, wow, we have to do everything we can not to have a deployment failure. And in fact, if you're going for an L3, you have to do redundant deployment.
Right.
So redundant deployment means that you're going to have more than one system. Either can fail, but the system still works overall. So with chute release, what it means is, let's say that the battery dies on your chute release. And I just got done saying it probably won't, but let's just say something funny happens and, you know, it's a really hot day and I don't know, the connector comes loose or I don't even know. But let's say you've never recharged it and it goes dead.
That's better.
Daisy chaining means that you take the band from one chute release, snap it into another chute release, go around your chute and take the band from the second and snap it into the first. So you have to think about these things as being like one chute release connected to another chute release, connected around back to the first one.
Right.
And when you've got them daisy chained like that in a row, if either one of them opens, it's going to let your chute go. And, you know, hopefully I'd like to think they both let go. And so your chute really gets let go. But that's what daisy chaining is. If either one of them opens, your parachute opens.
And that's the beauty of it, because and that's what I immediately thought of when I saw the product and was checking it out and everything. I was like, what if you put two of these together? You know, because I was thinking bigger parachute. And it's like, that gives you redundancy. Bing, a light bulb went off. I was like, okay, got to have them. So.
Yeah. The challenge stays the same. Even if you daisy chain them, do a shake test. Make sure that you've got a good secure bundle there. Because if you think about it, if you're not careful with the lengths of the bands that you use, you could end up with too loose of a bundle because you've got so much band that it really doesn't stretch much when it goes around. And so you may need to actually shorten the bands a little bit, or twist them, or, you know, do something, not use long bands, for instance, use the very shortest bands, but just make sure that you've got a good secure grip on the chute. But, you know, that's the same principle that you'd have even if you were using one chute release is, you know, shake test your bundle, make sure you've got that chute held pretty tightly.
But not too tight.
And see, that's the thing. People said, well, why didn't you, because you mentioned your cable cutter, right? Well, when people do cable cutters, they take plastic zip ties and they crank them down. You know, crank them down tight. People are used to thinking of that being the standard for delayed deployment with a cable cutter, is you got a zip tie cranked down. It actually helps to cut it, right? If you've got some nice tension in there.
Right.
But if you do that with chute release, if you take zip ties and you really crank it down hard, one, you might break your pin. But even if you don't break your pin, because they're aircraft aluminum and they're Teflon coated and all that, even if you don't break it, you might pull hard enough that the little servo inside chute release can't pull the pin. You might bind it up. And so I started thinking, you know, how do you tell people how hard they can tighten it? And then I decided, let's just use bands that the band would break before it would do that. And that makes it a little easier, right? How can you go wrong? You use the bands we give you, you tighten it up, it's going to work.
It's kind of an
engineered solution, right? The band takes care of the tension. All you have to worry about is it tight enough to hold your chute?
Well, this makes a perfect time to take a quick break here and get some sponsorship here in the show.
Thanks for spending your time with us here at The Rocketry Show. We would love to hear from you. Send your feedback and suggestions to ideas@therocketryshow.com. For question and answer topics or messages to the hosts of the show, use mailbag@therocketryshow.com. Thanks again for listening to The Rocketry Show.
We're going to talk about Sirius Rocketry. And these guys have been around since 1988 and have been providing the Rocketeer with great kits, motors, supplies, and more. They've got a great web store that's always growing with more and more products in there for you and courteous service. And you can see in real time whether or not something's actually there or not. And they'll keep you in touch with how that happens. And a lot of cool stuff. And Gene, what have you found on their site that looks cool?
Well, I thought I would take a little bit of a look at some of the accessories for Jolly Logic. products, since we're talking about it today and stuff. And first, we'll start off with a couple of things. If you guys have already, I know there's a lot of people out there using shoot releases. One thing that that I was kind of wondering about is, well, what happens if some ejection gas hits the shoot release? Is it going to burn the casing? Is it going to mar it or anything? Well, there is a solution out there, and it's the Jolly Logic Shoot Release Protector. Comes in a variety of colors, black, red, or yellow. And for $10, it's a nice little fire protection blanket that sits right in your shoot release and still gives you full freedom for the operation of the peg and the rubber band to go through on the shoot. So
that's cool. It's
kind of a nice little thing. If you really, I really dig the shoot releases, and I have had some burn marks on one of them. And I think I might just, like, for $10, it's well worth it. They also have replacement batteries, too, for $9.95 for any altimeter 1, 2, or 3 or shoot release, fully rechargeable. Those are the things that you can do yourself. And for $10, if you use it enough as I do, it's probably something that you want to keep in the back of your mind that they are available.
Cool.
In addition to that, of course, they still have the original altimeter 1 generation 2, the altimeter 2, which is $69.95. I like the altimeter 2 a lot because it has a lot of data, but the altimeter 3, which runs for $99.95, is downloadable via Bluetooth to your iOS or Android device, and it gives you a lot of data. Now, I was sort of lukewarm on it when it first came out, but now I'm really into it because the software update that just came out maybe about a couple of weeks ago really adds a lot of data that you can pick up. It has as much data as the altimeter 2, and it gives you stuff that you could just get on your phone and shoot yourself an email and get an Excel spreadsheet. Ooh. So there's a lot of data that you can get out of the altimeter 3, and I found that out because I'm working on my TARC team and we're using that as our test altimeter, so we're getting our data and getting a database built from all that stuff. So Jolly Logic stuff, fantastic for that. So
excellent.
So we'll start there, but I will of course go into at least one rocket kit, and this is one that I absolutely love. It's the Nike Hercules made by Launchpad. It's available on the Sirius Rocketry site. It's a very difficult kit to build. The fins are actually kind of heavy cardstock that you have to build, and it's a complex kit. But if you get it built and you do it right and take your time with it, it is gorgeous. It is a 29 millimeter motor mount. It's 47.25 inches tall. 3.25 inch diameter. So you could put a 29 millimeter motor into this thing, put a shoot release in it, and really have a lot of fun with it. It's a great building kit if you like scale. It's amazing because it's very well detailed. I got one of these recently and I haven't tackled it yet. It's on my build pile, but I took a look at the instructions. There's quite a bit of complexity to the build, so it's going to be a real challenge, but a real reward once you see it fly. And right now, normally that's $90, and it's going for $78.19 on sale at SiriusRocketry.com or SiriusRocketry.biz, B-I-Z.
Very cool. Sirius Rocketry for the Sirius Rocketeer.
Amen.
Welcome back to the Rocketry Show. We're talking to John Beans of Jolly Logic, and we're talking all about the shoot release. Jim's got some stories or something to follow up here from before the break.
Well, the simplicity of the operation of this thing is amazing. It's just, like you said, it just works. But that's why I like it and why I'm attracted to it, because I've tested it. I've only had about 4 flights on one just as a test as I'm slowly moving my way forward through it. And I've had like one where the parachute didn't unfurl, and that's because I wrapped Nomex around the chute and then did the bundle around that. So, right. Then I put shoot release on the outside of it. But,
Did the pin release on the way down?
It did, but the Nomex did not unfold. So, my mistake. Luckily, it's snowing and we had plenty of snow that my light rocket landed beautifully. And I mean, the shoot release operated as it was expected to. It's just my wrapping of the Nomex around the parachute and then wrapping shoot release on the outside of the Nomex caused the issue. And I was quick to realize, I was like, I should have known that. So
I think that's one of the fascinating things about this is how people kind of adapt and learn how to take something new like this. And the little light bulbs go off like, oh, wait a minute. I was just doing that because I used to have to do that. Or wait a minute, what's the best way to do this?
It causes you to think a little differently, right?
It does. And deployment's hard, even without shoot release. Even if you just got a rocket, you have motor eject, a parachute comes out. I've crashed so many rockets just because I folded the chute wrong, or it got stuck in the tube. Right? So I think one of the things that people have is that they've got their little tribal things they've learned to do, right? To make it work, mm-hmm. because it's serious business. And so it's kind of doubly hard to change your habits when your habits were very hard learned and you stick with what you do because you did it other ways and they didn't work. So, you know, it's you know, nobody wants their rocket to crash. Not a good thing.
No, not at all.
But you know, you can feel that when people tell you their stories about using chute release, because a lot of people will say, oh, I had a beautiful flight the other day. You know, I flew this rocket to 1,200 feet and I had the chute release set for 500 feet and it opened perfectly. I didn't have to walk that far. And of course, the first thing I think is, why'd you set it for 500 feet? Why didn't you set it for 200 feet? You know,
right.
But I tell people, start higher, learn how long it takes for the way you fold your chutes to open. And then kind of learn from that. I mean, it was a little bit surprising to me the first time I flew Altimeter 3, you know, which you know I invented with the chute release, and I saw the data, and it kind of surprised me that when in the rockets I fly, every rocket's different, but in the rockets I was flying, which are pretty lightweight, the rocket would reach terminal velocity in a couple of seconds, 2, 3, 4 seconds, and then it tumbled at whatever rate it was going to tumble, then the parachute would open. And it would reach, again, terminal velocity on a parachute in 2 or 3 seconds. And so you saw this kind of classic, here's one slope of it tumbling, then the chute opens, and then here's a slower thing of it tumbling, but of it on parachute. But the thing is that it wasn't accelerating the whole way down, and it wasn't decelerating all the time on parachute. You know, a parachute slows a rocket down to whatever speed it's going to be within a few seconds. And so if you open your parachute at 500 feet, you're just watching it drift that whole time.
Bye-bye.
If you can reliably open it lower, open it lower, because, you know, it's going to slow down really, really, really quickly. And then it's just drifting after that.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because as I was learning dual deploy, I you know, with this traditional way of doing it with the black powder and the altimeter base and all that, I would always set my minimum height was 500 feet. And
right.
I noticed, like, on the chute release, I'm like, well, you know what? Why don't I set it for lower? Because I'm in the back of a high school that I work at, and it, limited size field. Like, I'm gonna set it lower and see what happens. And it was beautiful because, like, I didn't have to walk that far. And even for the one that, you know, that I didn't bundle it correctly, it still landed very close to the pad, and no damage was done to the rocket, and the chute release worked. And, you know, so. I like simple solutions because sometimes you just want to fly and you just want to have fun with it. And there are times that I love getting into building motors and doing all that stuff and all the prep work and doing the shear pins and all that stuff. I love that too. But something like to keep a bunch of high school kids like into it and fascinated with the hobby,
right.
and getting it's a perfect solution for that. Between that and the Altimeter 3 with your Bluetooth and hooking up to your iPhone or Android device, it's really cool because you get data right there. You get curves, you get all the stuff, you get your rocket back. I mean, it's really good for that kind of a program that I'm running. But
yeah,
it's also
I almost feel like the flight's twice as fun because there's always the will it take off, will it stay in one piece, will it eject. But now there's like this whole second drama, and it's even true if you do traditional dual deploy. I like sitting there, the whole crowd's watching, like, is the parachute going to come out?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's really cool. I like the whole drama of that and it doing that.
No, especially
good
for somebody. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also good for somebody like me because, you know, I live in Boston, and it's a little hard to find black powder around here, and I live in an apartment, and you know, I'm not entirely sure my neighbors or my girlfriend would want me to bring a 1 pound can of black powder into the apartment. And I, honestly, I don't have any experience with that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that there are people who could, you know, teach me how to handle it safely. But while I do want to do some dual deployment, because I fly on kind of a breezy field, the idea makes me nervous. But I'm building some larger mid-power rockets now. And, you know, I don't want to have to, I don't know, fiddle around for, you know, 9 months before I finally figure out this dual deployment thing. I would like to be able to launch and get the rocket back. And so it's kind of a perfect product for people like me.
Right. And you can, you know, the idea that you can loan somebody your dual deploy, that's new. Right? I mean, because you have to build the thing. You have to build it into the rocket before. And now you can kind of move it around. And if you've got some rockets, I mean, because I don't know about you guys. I've always... had a rocket and thought, you know what I'd like to put in this rocket, but I'm not gonna because I'll never get it back.
Right.
You know, I have an H mode. I'm gonna put H in this. That would be awesome. But I'll have to wait for a perfect windless day, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For me, that's my Jolly Logic altimeter, too. I you know, there's so many days where I'm like, yeah, I'd really like to see how high this goes, but I'm not going to lose this altimeter today, so.
Now you're going to double down, right? Put a
exactly.
Shoot release.
Now I can shoot release and the altimeter, too.
It's a nice combo.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm glad you guys have, you like it. I've enjoyed reading the comments from people online that have been using it. I don't know why I waited, frankly, so long to do it. I thought that it would have limited appeal, like I said, limited commercial appeal, and I was wrong. I think I was just wrong.
Well, so. You know, it's like it's just the sheer simplicity of it that really makes it a big point for a lot of people out there that I've talked to about it. You know, and in educational and things, you're right. I don't want to play with black powder with high school kids. It's not safe. You know, I mean, you have to be very safe with that stuff. And I am not going to be liable for blowing up a kid's finger. You know, that's
right.
Just not what I want to do. I want to fly and teach them safe.
And on a windy day, you can fly to 600 feet and lose your rocket. I mean,
oh, easily.
You don't have
to
fly to exotic flights, you know, big parachute, light rocket, and boy, they just drift.
Mm-hmm. There's contests for that.
I've already had a couple people say, can you make a parachute release product that actually lets go with a parachute on when there's thermally days? Because my rocket's like starts going up. You know, is there a way we can let go of the chute? I want my rocket back.
I hate thermals. I'm just saying. I know other people love them for their contest stuff, but I hate thermals. Sorry. There, I said it.
The gods will now treat you to many thermals this summer.
Yeah, I know. I cursed myself. So I got to do my tribal thing and then walk around my rocket three times, jumping around on my left foot while I pack the chute I have to use like the one brand of talcum powder that I know works because nothing else will work. So, I have those stories too. I think we all do. Rocketry is a little bit like baseball players. We tend to be suspicious about stuff, you know, for what works, like you were saying.
Right.
And it's just, this is really kind of like busting me out of like a little bit of tried and true stuff that I've gone through over the past few years. And it's kind of like reacquainting me with how fun mid and lower power stuff can be in some ways as I'm testing this. And it's really, it's just bringing back the joy of like that first dual deploy that was successful to me. You know, like, oh, this thing works. Oh, it's great. You know? Yeah.
So what are you trying to say, Gene?
I think I like it. How's that?
Very cool.
I have to say one selfish reason that kind of drove the timing is, as I've done rocketry, I tend to, and I don't know if you guys are like this too, I tend to get bigger and bigger rockets and bigger and bigger motors. I was just dreading doing my L2 because my L1 was tough enough. I mean, I must have walked on my cert flight. I must have walked 2 miles across over two fences, across a stream. Just hoping that I had a direct line on where my rocket went because I didn't have a locator in it. And I was just dreading an L2 because everything I looked at, you know, unless you build like a
big one,
incredibly stout, heavy rocket, which isn't a crazy bad idea, your L2 is going to be pretty high. And I was just holding off on that. And so, you know, I'll fly my L2 with a shoot release and, you know, get a little J, little K motor and go up to, you know, 5,000 feet and, you know, I plan for it to land closer than my L1 landed. So we'll see how that goes.
Let's hope so for you.
Best laid plans, right?
I did my L2 on a 20 pound rocket that I built and I got 2,500 feet on a J800. That was,
So you kept it down. That's smart. That's smart.
I did. Well, I learned early, low and slow is the way to go if you want to get a cert.
There you go. There you go. And frankly, it's more interesting to watch because, you know, an L2200 that punches through a cloud and is kind of cool and kind of, but it's gone. I mean, it's just.
Yeah. Especially for certification, you get very nervous about that. So, you know, and I actually dual deployed my level one cert. So I've been, I'm a computer guy. So I've been playing with the electronics for a long time.
So did you did you do the same rocket for L1 and L2?
No, no. I have a propensity. I like the SR-14 Archer
Oh, I do too. From North Coast.
It's one of my favorites. Yeah. So I got the North Coast reissue of it, which is the 2.6, and I have an altimeter bay for that. That was my first dual deploy rocket. Then I moved into a Mad Cow Torrent for my L1 because I wanted something kind of beefier that would go a little bit lower.
Right.
And I've been dual deploying on Fs and Gs ever since I got back into rocketry 3 years ago. And then I decided to upscale my Archer to a 5.5-inch, 7-8-foot rocket. And, you know, and I scratch built it because I was using Rocksim and all that stuff. And that's where I really got into it. So I'm thinking about an 8-inch Archer, but that's not coming for a while.
Yeah, I think you and I have similar rocket tastes because I love rockets that have strakes on them. I just think that's a nice profile rocket.
Well,
I love those.
The challenge is to build those strakes. Like as you get bigger, they're going to break easier. So you have to figure out a way to make it stronger, even with that extra length added to it. So I'm having a ball with it. You know, it's just a lot of fun. Taking my time, enjoying where I'm doing, playing with toys. They're just keep getting bigger, though.
Yeah, I have a similar concern with level two. I'm level one now, and chances are whatever I have for level two is going to go quite a ways up there. And one of the things I enjoy right now about the hobby is that the rockets generally are within sight, so I can tell when things are right or wrong or whatever, and I kind of like having that comfort. Oh yes, the Apogee deploy, everything looks good. All right, cool.
Right.
And the thing that makes me nervous looking at so many level twos is you don't know what's going on when it's up there. It's a puff. I think that's right. So, so what I ended up working on now is I'm working on radio telemetry links, so I can tell. Or somebody could tell on the ground for me that things went well.
Yeah, really?
Oh, right. Yeah, you separated. Okay, good, good. That's a good thing. So we're not looking for a lawn dart coming in.
Yeah, it's better to have somebody feeding you the data or getting Kate to tell you, which would be really nice and really expensive, but it'd be awesome to have.
We've all been at launches where someone says, does anybody see it? Does anybody have eyes on it?
Yeah.
Does anybody see it? You know? And I've seen those, and if you get a moon burner or something that's got a nice long trail, you can get a sense of where it should be based on where it kind of burned out. But sometimes I'll think, oh wow, good luck with that. Good luck with that one, because I don't see it, and I know that it's that way a long way, but good luck.
Yeah, that was the whole thing with my launch to 3,762 feet on one of my rockets, and
hey, if you don't know exactly how high it went, don't say.
Well, we know.
He's kind of like mushy that way.
I can't help it. It's a problem. And I've admitted it's a problem. I have to know
you're
the exact
an engineer. What do you expect?
Yeah. Anyway, so we lost sight of it up, you know, obviously. It's a 6-foot rocket, but it's pretty thin. And so that was exactly the thing. Where did you see it? You see it? We all lost sight of it one way or another. Some people had it longer than others. Then the smoke cloud went over and they lost it. So
that was the I-200, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we started going out, looking, you know, some of us went where it should be and others looked around where they thought it might be. And so someone found it where it should have been. that was a big relief.
It always surprises me how close you can be to a rocket and not see it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's especially hard for some of the smaller ones. Like Mega Mosquito is one of my favorite rockets, smaller rockets to fly. And if you have tall grass, good luck.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, even just a plowed rows, I mean, 8 inches high, the rockets just lay down. The chute lays down.
Right in a furrow.
It's tough.
Gone.
A cornfield, boy. Jeez, a cornfield.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had to do one of those that, you know, mine landed in the middle of a cornfield. I'm saying, yeah, it's not going to be too bad. I'll just walk the line. And the corn does not grow in a way that makes it convenient to walk a line. And luckily, there was a loud beeper on the thing because that's another thing. I figure I'll hear it. No, the corn pretty much absorbs it all. But once you got near it or close enough to catch like one little beep, oh, where was that? I think it was this way. And you walk slowly. There's another beep. Okay. corn. Yeah. Soybeans, I heard, are the worst.
Yeah, are they?
Well, our buddy Andrew, we're quoting Andrew like crazy. Our buddy Andrew laid out the scenario. When they grow, your rockets go down and the canopy just kind of falls right back where it was.
Yeah. You know, I'm jealous of Andrew. Andrew has a field he can fly in all the time.
and I live in California, and mm-hmm. we only get to fly at launches and launches with waivers. And it's,
right.
you know, we just recently found out that Google's not going to be able to let us continue to fly at Moffett Field in the Bay Area, which was really good because lots of school groups. It's a very good central right. location for the Bay Area. And it's a giant tarmac at an airport. And so it was a really convenient place to do low-power rocketry for local scout groups.
That's where the Mythbusters Mythbusters do a lot of things, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're in Alameda, which is an island that's in the northern part of the Bay. And then they also have a range near where I live across in the East Bay, which is a military base that they've done some things in. But, you know, it's – but even at the – town hall at the National Association of Rocketry annual convention, that's the top issue, finding fields, you know. So if there's one thing that rocketry needs more than anything else right now, it's nice big launch fields, because it's getting harder and harder.
Amen.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm jealous of Andrew because he has a field. He lives out in rural or something, and evidently yes. has access to fields he can use anytime. So he was a great beta tester for Jolly Logic because he said, "Hey, I can fly whenever I want to fly."
Yes.
And that's just a concept for someone who lives in California. That's not how we do things out here.
What? So I'm very jealous.
Anytime you want?
How can this be?
Yeah, at that point, it's anytime you can afford it, right? Because, you know, they don't give engines away, so.
Yeah,
when the Powerball got up to over $1 billion, I bought a ticket, and I thought, okay, if I win this, I'm going to buy, like, 5 farms all right next door to each other.
leave them, like, mowed.
Yeah, that was my thought, too. If I ever hit, like, just stupid rich, I would just buy a huge block of farms. Pay somebody to keep it mowed.
Your spaceport. You'd make a spaceport.
Yeah, exactly. Put like a concrete pad in the middle for launch pads to set up.
Exactly.
Ooh, hydraulic pantry.
Yeah.
Yep. All that stuff. You'd have bunkers. You'd have AV feeds. You know, you'd tape everybody's flight for them and give, you know, put it online. Sure.
I love it.
Yes.
When can we go?
Yeah.
All right. Let's get in on this, guys.
I actually wish that there was a full-time field. And maybe I'm just ignorant and don't know that there is. But it would be great if in some bit of farmland somewhere we could actually do that, make a full-time or a couple of them. You can do some regional fields, Tripoli or NAR, you know, could – it seems like past time that they had a national field, you know. Full-time national field. Maybe that's a pipe dream. Well, that'd be cool, I think.
Anybody out there wants to, like, you know, add their comments about a national field in history, there's many ways to contact us, and we'll tell you about that after the show, after the interview.
Cool. Well, I guess we've run the whole the gamut here, from the altimeter down to what if we had $1 million?
I had $1 million.
So thanks for joining us, John. This was a lot of fun.
Well, hey, I appreciate the opportunity, and I'll just say to anybody listening, I love to hear product ideas. I love to hear feedback on the products. Pat Butler recently at Dino Shoots made a little accessory. I don't know if you guys saw it. He made a couple of accessories for shoot release, and I thought that was really neat. He made a little Nomex protecting sleeve for it. You can fly it with it.
Yeah.
And a little storage pouch you can store it in, you know, clip it to your belt or whatever to carry it around. I thought it was really, really neat. But if anybody has ideas like that, something you want to do, I'd love to support you just like I'm supporting Pat.
Cool.
With ideas like that. I think it's really, really cool. I love the community aspect of rocketry, and it's things like this show, I think, which are great examples of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Good job, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, we're all patting each other on the back. I'm feeling the love. Yeah. Anybody for Kumbaya?
Well, that was a fun visit with John Beans of Jolly Logic, talking about the shoot release. And we know more now. Hopefully you know more now. And... and you'll be as excited as we are about that product. It's a great thing. So,
I absolutely love them. I mean, like I was saying, we have I'm the coach for a TARC team, and we're using it to get our data, the altimeter 3, and I really like the data because I can share it with all the kids like instantly to their email addresses in a spreadsheet. So it's a beautiful thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it saved a couple of rockets of mine, and I'm hoping to do my my L1 in about a month or so.
Oh, cool.
And I usually fly on kind of a windy field, so hoping the chute release will save my rocket from disappearing.
Well, wish you luck with that.
Well, I can't wait to get a hold of my own here pretty soon. I've used one of Jim's chute releases a couple times on one of my rockets that were built to be cable cutter rockets, and yeah, I like it. Me likes.
It's simple, to the point, and it just works. I like it.
Cool. Well, on that note, we're going to get ready to head on out of here. But today's show, by the way, is the last one of season 2. And wow. We'll be taking a quick break while we technically redo things for the show. We've been kind of working around with this as this season has been progressing. And some of the technical growths have kind of like led to some of the delays we've had doing shows. But we're going to really do a Roto-Rooter treatment here and get things all set up and have a nice, fresh setup going in for season 3, our third anniversary.
Any teasers?
Well, actually, there is a big teaser because season 3 is when we have actual astronauts around to talk to you.
No.
So we've been kind of teasing we've been kind of teasing a little bit off and on earlier in the year, really, and we're going to tease harder here while we're on break. If there's questions you want to ask an astronaut, things you've always wanted to know about or whatever, send them to The Rocketry Show. You can go to our website at therocketryshow.com and use the form there to send it directly to us. You can also use the voicemail system. There's a little tab on the corner of the website you can pull out and just hit record, and it'll use whatever microphone is on your phone or computer or whatever, so you can speak out a question for the for an astronaut. Or you can email us at mailbag@therocketryshow.com. So many
ways to get hold of us.
Yes,
send those questions in, guys, because we will look at them, we will listen to them, we will read them, and we'll ask them.
Exactly. So anything you ever wanted to know, ever wanted to ask an astronaut, do send it to us, because that is part of our big season 3, our third anniversary season. So pretty crazy, pretty wild.
3 years of fun.
Yeah.
And going.
And there's more fun stuff coming up in season 3, too, that we're working on. A lot of cool things. And so we're looking forward to that. It's going to be exciting. We will keep the mini shows going, so we'll keep in touch with you from time to time. And actually, what the mini shows are going to end up being are places where we not only update you and talk to you, but they're also giving us a chance to kind of mess around with the new tech that we're installing here over the next few weeks. So,
fresh electronics.
Exactly.
I love the smell of fresh electronics.
It's not like it was back in the 60s when it smelled like warm tubes everywhere, but there you go.
Sounds like an electric blanket gone bad.
Yeah. So anyway, on that note, we're going to wrap it up here and head on out of here. You have a great summer. Enjoy flying rockets. Be safe. And again, we'll keep the mini episodes going. We'll be in touch with you. It's not going to be as frequently as what's happening during a season or as it will be during a season. But we'll be in touch throughout the summer to let you know what we're up to and what's going on. You can hear us mess around with new stuff.
And don't forget to check out our Facebook page. We're there,
yes.
And a lot of discussions go on there. Just search for The Rocketry Show on Facebook, and you'll find us.
Yeah, and I have to say, the Rocketry Show discussion group is a Rocketry Show in and of itself in words. I mean, we don't always get to the stuff that's talked about on our group, but feel free to bring up post-launch pictures, post questions. You can talk directly to us by asking questions. You can also, there's been a lot of email discussions going back and forth, and I've been so overwhelmed with trying to get things ready work-wise, because here in the Cleveland, Ohio area, we've got the RNC going on, so life is chaos.
Yay.
It's cool, but it's chaos. So that meant I was barely in touch with anyone, but I see that there are quite a few discussions going on between Jim and Daniel and some listeners and some other folks out there, and it's been really cool reading on the sidelines here. So I'll be responding and all that stuff. So yeah, you can email us, have discussions on the discussion forum on our website, forum.therocketryshow.com, and on our Facebook sites, and yeah, all kinds of ways.
So, well, with that, I guess I'll just say keep your eyes in the skies.
That's right. We'll see you next time. Whoosh.
Boom.
And the rocket baby.
No.
I forgot what my nickname was this time.
Thanks for listening to The Rocketry Show. You can interact with The Rocketry Show by going to therocketryshow.com. CG and The Rocket Noob have personal rocketry blogs you can visit. You can find The Rocket Noob's blog at rocketnoob.blogspot.com.
rocketn00b.blogspot.com.
CG's rocket blog is at cpgaeronautics.com. Also, vote for the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast aggregators.
Batteries not included. Member FDIC. Must be 21 or over.